Whiskey Chasers, where we talk about our passion for whiskey and its history, either amongst ourselves or while interviewing distilleries, all while enjoying a glass. I'm Steve.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Chris.
Please enjoy responsibly while enjoying this week's episode of the Whiskey Chasers.
Just going to load my pipe up while we start talking about it.
What you going to load?
Maltese Falcon. And this is 2017. So has a little age on it. And I remember like having the Maltese Falcon and being like, "That's good." I mean, just smell how like strong that is.
Oh wow,
that is strong, right?
Like, what is that? It's like oaky.
Yeah, that's it's an English blend. It's smoky and leather and oak.
It reminds me of like a Scotch.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like very much like a Scotch. Yeah. Not like heavy peaty Scotch, more smoky,
woodsy, smoky.
Yes. Yeah. Like a Lafroy. Like if Lafroy and Lagavulin had a baby. That would be that smell.
Yeah, it's got, you know, all that like kind of like leather kind of. Yeah, it's really good stuff. It's quite amazing. But with age on it, it's just like this is just beyond what you could get like fresh. You know what I mean?
Well, we got Fourgate today. Steve is not with us. Still recording. Right. So it's just Chris and I.
Yeah, it's just me and Nick.
Just the two of us. Like the good old days. Yeah. I mean, not good with Steve. Steve is still good.
Steve's good. But this is what we used to do all the time, just without microphones.
That's how most of this got started. It was like, hey, you guys should do a podcast. Hey, you should do like a YouTube channel.
Right. Yeah.
And we're like,
nah, I don't want to get filmed.
Don't know.
If I want to get filmed.
And then Steve was like, we should really do this. Okay. We should probably check this out and do it. But we got Fourgate. Chris, have you heard a lot about Fourgate? Maybe I'm just assuming.
I think, honestly, I had heard about it somewhat.
Okay.
But I really started hearing more about it from you and Tipsy. Because Tipsy's always kind of been big into this.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was like, whatever. Because it doesn't look like much. You know what I mean? And I think, I always thought it was sourced. I think, I don't know if it is sourced or not, but I always thought it was sourced. And the price tag's always been kind of hefty on it.
Very hefty.
But he pushed it. And, you know, I was there. Actually, the first time I met him, he had me try this one, right?
No, he had you try his store pick.
Oh, no, that's what it was. It was a store pick.
And you and I bought a different bottle that night. And we opened and finished
that one. We opened and finished it.
Yes,
yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. It was a store pick, which makes even more sense. And I was just blown away. And then we drank the whole thing. And what was funny was it was pretty proofy.
Yes, it was.
But I remember being done being like, wow, that really was like enjoyable. Yeah. Like it was gone too soon. Like almost like, wow, there's none left. Well, oh well. But it was great. You know what I mean?
We don't do
that very often. Yeah.
We haven't done that for a very long time.
Yeah. If that says anything. But as far as like about the brand, about where they're getting stuff, how they're making it and all that stuff, I don't know much about it.
They're very transparent about it all.
Okay.
But they didn't get their start until 2018. So they are babies.
So they have been sourcing.
Yes, very much so. I don't know that they ever plan on making their own. From my understanding, not on the horizon. Like it was never one of those things that they set out, hey, we're going to start sourcing. We're going to build our own distillery. We're going to start doing our own stuff. Right. They got their start in 2018 with the idea. I feel like you and I would thoroughly enjoy doing this. Their idea was each year, like each bottling, was going to be a different expression. So each blend, each time they put out a different batch, it was always going to be something unique and something different. They didn't really have a desire to be the same. Like they wanted to do this to where we enjoy it, we think it tastes good, we're going to put it out there and see what happens kind of thing. Which I don't mind. I think it's a really cool idea. If you don't ever plan on making your own, this is like your way of making it unique.
Doing something to it to make it, which is something I always talk about. Like if you're going to source, fine, but do something to it. Make it unique, make it your own. Don't just take something from somebody, put it in a bottle and sell it, hoping your marketing is going to carry you.
And in fact, they've talked about, I think they've got one bottling that they have enough barrels of the same thing that they have bought and set aside that they could do kind of a staple bottle for like the next couple of years, like to where it would always be the same blend, always, and that would just be their basic line offering, and everything else would be different. I get that. I appreciate that because it's a way of having the revenue stream continue. Right. Like, people love your brand, they love your company, they want your stuff. It's kind of like Beam. Like, you kind of have those, the old timers, that's their bottle. They always go for that bottle. So I feel like they were trying to create that mm-hmm. in the midst of all these different batches, just in case it didn't work.
Something like a standby.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But I remember trying, when they first started, I remember trying some of their bottles. They have red bottlings, mm-hmm. like red labels that are their bourbon. Okay. It wasn't that good. Like, it was a step up from Bullet.
So kind of thing. Decent enough.
It was decent enough, but it wasn't anything to write home about. But the pricing, you're still talking like 100 and some odd bucks for their bottles, which makes it really difficult to justify that purchase. Like, really difficult to justify that purchase. Their bottles range from anywhere from like $100 to almost $300.
Okay. So they kind of are sourcing premium stuff.
Only. They are. So they get their stuff from multiple distilleries within Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Their rye they get from MGP. They're very open about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because out of all the ones they tried, MGP was the best rye in their minds.
MGP does make a good rye.
They make a decent rye. Like, it's not terrible. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst that I've had. Every time I think of MGP rye, I think of Bullet rye. And there's better stuff out there.
Yeah. But, you know, and this is 10-year rye, but we've had Bullet 10 rye.
And we did like that.
And this, but this is not that.
Right. Good. This is something different. Yeah.
Not that that's not good, but this is really, really good. But I guess what you're trying to say is, it would be safe to say that if you're getting a bottle of Fourgate, you're getting something that's going to be unique almost every time.
Every time. Yeah. This one, we've got the 10-year rye. They just released this as a specialty release this year. They most likely won't ever do this one again. It'll be a different age.
Different kind of. Because this one says River Kelvin Rye. That's just what they named it, like a special bottling.
So the name Kelvin has something to do with the company.
With the name of the Fourgate and all that. The picture of the whatever that is.
Sort of. So they only did 11 barrels of this guy.
Wow.
So very limited.
And this is from MGP.
It is MGP stuff. Fourgate, they decided to do, because it is a Kentucky-based company. So Fourgate is that, it's the fence. You know, it's the traditional fence you see in Kentucky.
That's what it is. Yep. Okay, so I pulled this up because I wanted to take, every time I hear Fourgate or look at Fourgate, it reminds me of a pipe tobacco. And they have different colors as well, but that's the pipe tobacco. See that?
Oh, yeah. It's
called Foursquare.
Yeah.
And you see the label and everything? I don't know what it is about that label that reminds me of that. And that, well, obviously the four and the four, but Foursquare, Fourgate, it just, like, I always think it's like,
it kind of goes well together. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a very unique, like, kind of basic
pipe
tobacco tin.
And this is very basic bottling.
And that's kind of what that is. Yeah. It's like the white with the dark color. So, yeah.
When I first saw it, I thought it was a gimmick bottle because it just looks, it's nothing against Fourgate or their labeling, but it doesn't look like much. It really just doesn't look like much. And you see the price tag and you're like, there's got to be something wrong. Like, they had to mess up the price tag on this.
Because it also, it looks sourced.
Yes. I mean? Yeah. The front of it does very much look sourced on that guy. So Fourgate, when they got their start, they decided they don't have control over the whiskey because they're sourcing. So they're not in control of mash bills. They're not in control of wood that's put in right away. It's like all those things. They're not really in control of those. Right. And they buy the used the barrels when they're already aging. So they recognize we don't have a player say in this, and that's fine. So they go after the finishings. That's what they're well known for and what they've done really, really well for themselves at.
It's one of the ways that they make it their own.
The Kelvin that you see on there, the name Kelvin, there's a Kelvin Cooperage in Kentucky. They got their start in Scotland. And this, I think it's like a father and son, if I remember right, got their start in Scotland. And when the bourbon boom started over here, they said, hey, we see an opportunity. We've been doing this over here in Scotland. Yeah. So we're going to move to Kentucky. We're going to keep one in Scotland and we're going to keep one in Kentucky. And we're going to start offering something unique in Kentucky that other companies don't. Mm. So they are very custom, like everything to the wood type, to the barrel style, to importing, exporting barrels, used barrels. That's their specialty.
So they don't just do new ones, but they kind of deal with.
They're the middleman.
Yeah.
They're the middleman of getting,
you need
like
a specialty barrel, we can get it for you.
Like from any country, because they've got connections through the Scotch. So they're like, hey, if you're looking for a special bottle, like a used sorry, not bottle, but barrel, like a special used barrel of type of wine or Japanese whiskey or Japanese oak or this or that. They're like, let us know, we'll get it. And so a lot of their finishings, they have like named after the Kelvin because of what they've done.
Because of what
like,
they've done for the company.
Yep, what they've done for the company itself. So it's a unique partnership that they have, but there's not a whole lot on this company history-wise, and there's not a ton on the Kelvin Cooperage either.
I was going to say, if they're working as a cooperage in Scotland, they probably aren't making a whole lot because they don't really use new ones over there. Right. But they're probably dealing in more exotic.
I mean, they're
already used casks.
Because you're looking at sherry wines, port wines, sometimes different oaks that they like used barrels. So it's very interesting how these two companies kind of came together and decided to partner together. None of the whiskeys is theirs. And they're fine with that.
And they're okay with it. But they're transparent about it. They're doing everything right about that.
They are.
If you're going to source, which is what we've harped and harped and harped on. So I like that.
The only catch for me in all of this
the price.
Is the price tag. Like, because we started out with Pikesville, which is very storied, very well done, very well made, very thought out.
At a fantastic price.
At a fantastic price. Yeah. You're talking a 6-year-old rye, 110 proof. At $50, $75, if you're really pushing, 100.
Yeah, if you're really pushing it. But the retail is what, like six, what did we say? It was like 58 bucks.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
But then you got this guy that's a 10-year-old. There's 11 barrels that went into the batch. I get that those two things make it more pricey to begin with, but it's not theirs. And they didn't do any type of finishing with this bottle.
Not with this one. Then now this one is, so it's aged 10 years, but it's also barrel proof. For people.
Right. Yes. So does cast strength as well. Yep.
Basically, this is a 10-year-old barrel proof MGP rye is what we're having. But that being said, this is very, very good. And we can almost always pick up MGP. And I don't really get a ton of MGP in this.
So Tipsy was like, hey, you got to get this. I know you like ryes. I've heard a lot of people rave and crave about this. You know, guys that I've recommended to text me afterwards. They're like grateful, so grateful you know, gave us this bottle, like pushed this bottle. And he was trying to push it for a while. And I was like, I know it's sourced. I know it's a rye. It's gotta be MGP. I've had sourced MGP rye, not a huge fan, right? And he kept pushing, kept pushing, kept pushing. And finally was like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's see what happens. I'll take the risk. First time I opened the bottle and tried it, I flat out told him, I was like, I don't know how I felt about it. Like, but it was still part of me, like in the back of my head, of like, okay, this is MGP. I can taste MGP. I hate MGP. Like those thoughts, right? Like, I don't want to like this kind of thing.
But I do.
But I do. Yeah. And after like the second glass, I was like, dang it. This is actually not bad. Right. Like, this is actually pretty good.
Well, it doesn't have any of that green metal that I talk about with MGP.
It doesn't have that acetone finish either.
Yeah. Like, you know, that metal that turns green, you know, that cheap metal. That's what it is. And I've talked about it before, but that's like always what I get. And not, again, not a bad way, but it's a distinct way. And that's how I know MGP. I get this like thing and it's in the back of my mind. It's like, it's that metal, that junk metal that you wear on your wrist or whatever. And it turns green. You know what I'm talking
like
about?
Like the fake gold?
Yeah. Kind like of a, thing? Yeah. Like a fake thing. Yeah. And I don't know. It's metallic. It's a metallic taste.
Yes.
And I'm not getting that really with this. And normally with MGP, it's like prevalent.
It is normally very prevalent. I don't get this at all with this guy, which is surprising. I've become more impressed with Fourgate the more I have it. I've bought three of their bottles so far. Four of them, actually. And one for the club. So we've got the first one that you and I ever had, we opened and finished in one night. It was really, really good. And then we've got the Tipsy store pick, and that one's really good too and really different.
Yeah.
So I've bought it. Decent amount for me to complain about the price tag. Like, I don't really have any room to speak on that after buying so many of them.
Well, it's just crazy. I think anytime you see a sourced bottle for upwards of, you know, 80 and beyond, right, all the way up to like 300, you're like, wow, I don't know why I would ever spend that much money on that. But that just goes to show you that it's not always the case. There can be really good sourced stuff that is just limited. That's why it's expensive. They were able to get their hands on it, right? Or they did something to it or whatever it is. Now, there are times that we've had them. There are times you get a source bottle that was overpriced and it tastes like junk.
Well, I keep thinking about the barrel seagrass, and it wasn't junk. Like we all agreed.
I mean, I liked it.
We liked it. But so
as a cocktail,
I think we all kind of agreed. Like if they used a different whiskey as the base, this could have been different. Like this could have been much better. And maybe that is, I mean, like you're saying, quality. Yeah. There's something to be said about quality.
Yeah, because you could taste. I remember saying that actually at your house, that with that secret, I liked the flavors, but you could tell that the bourbon that they used or whatever, the whiskey that they used was low quality. And it was surviving solely on the flavors, which were done great. Now, the other thing I talked about was like, say they did have better whiskey in here, but then you'd have to tone the flavors down because the flavors were overpowering. It was like a cocktail. It was like having a cocktail. Like I wouldn't mind having that on the rocks on a hot sunny day, you know, and it's like having a made up cocktail, but it's because the flavors were so strong. But I did like what flavor was there. I liked it, you know, but I could tell it actually reminds me of, I don't know if I said that at the time, but we had that one summer, me and you drank a lot of this.
Oh, I know. I think I know exactly what you're thinking of.
It's like a pecan peach thing.
Yes, it was. I can picture their logo. Is it Campfire Whiskey? No. They've got a wolf on
Camptown?
It. What is was it that?
Camptown? It no, was Camptown. It's Camptown Ladies.
It was Florida Georgia Line's whiskey.
That's what it was?
It was. Yeah, it was Florida Georgia Line's like brand of whiskey.
And it was foolproof, right? But it was flavored up. Yes. It was flavored like peach pecan, which are both flavors I love. It was like peach tea pecan or something like that.
Old Camp.
And that's foolproof, right?
I believe so.
I remember it being it wasn't like a liqueur. And we drank that whole, that whole thing that summer. We were out in the pool, but it was ice.
I think we drank it within like a couple days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It might have been one day, actually.
I think we went through maybe a couple bottles.
And there was some high life going on.
Yes, there was. That was also that one. It's 70 proof.
70 proof. So it wasn't even quite foolproof, no. I guess. But that, it was kind of like similar to, I guess, how some people feel about the flavored Crown, where you're like, the whiskey that's in here is really just basic, right. Like junk almost. Almost junk.
We're nearing that edge.
The bitey, like for it to be bitey at 70 proof, right. You're like, what is going on here? It's because it's like 6 months old. You know what I mean? But that being said, the flavor is so good that it makes up for it. And if you're drinking it as a cocktail, you can't drink that stuff. Anything flavored, you can't drink as like a drink. You have to put in your mind it's a cocktail. And it's good.
I'm trying to think of the last like flavored, not finished, but like flavored that I drank, period, or drank neat, or even on the rocks.
Well, last year, was it last year or 2 years ago? We did the Crown Peach at one point.
I think it was last year.
We did that one I'm talking about. We tried the barrel seagrass. I mean, that's flavored in my
opinion. That's flavored, yeah.
I mean, there was a few other ones. Like, Christmas time, we always do some flavored
stuff. Right, we do some flavored stuff there.
But finished stuff, like, and again, I guess that's what I'm getting at. So if you were to take the barrel seagrass and put a little bit higher end whiskey in there, that would be good. But then you would have to pull back on the flavor a little bit because the flavor is too overpowering to appreciate the whiskey. Whereas the way it is now, you appreciate the flavor, but you can tell the whiskey's kind of, it's there as a filler. Like it's the platform, it's the stage. And you don't want to like have a polished stage and you have people tap dancing on it. Like, hey, be easy with the stage. You know what I mean?
Like we just got done with that.
Yeah, but you might have a nice stage and somebody playing the piano. You get what I'm saying? So yeah, I think that's one of the, so really the way that they have it set up right now is probably perfect. I think anybody that wants what we're talking about from barrel seagrass is like crazy, but I would love it. I'd love a really high-end whiskey in there with some of the flavors of seagrass without all the,
like the subtlety of the flavors.
Yeah, it's seagrass, right? Not sawgrass.
That's seagrass.
Seagrass, sawgrass. Okay. Yes. I always get the two mixed. But I did like it. I did like it. What you look at what Penelope does that stuff too. They do flavored stuff and so it's all sourced. And, right. But their stuff goes for expense.
Does.
Some of it
goes for
it's expense. It's like Smoke Wagon. Some of that stuff can get up there depending on what it is.
After having all that we've had, where's your justification from Pikesville, $50 MSRP, homegrown, essentially homemade, to we had one that was made by a well-known distillery. They had may have had their hand in it, right? And then you had one that was above a pizza shop. Right. And they and theirs is like $75 a bottle.
And they went to town with like expanding what their little kingdom, which is crazy.
Because it's crazy.
Yeah.
This is the most expensive bottle we've had.
And it's from the biggest supplier out there.
Right.
Like the biggest source.
So how do you justify like
Sourcy?
We went through that too.
Sourcy?
I think it's Sourcy.
Yeah. It's a Sourcy. Yeah.
How do you know what your price tag is or should be?
That's a tough thing.
Because would you have bought this bottle when you just by looking at it? Would you have spent the money on it?
Never without trying it. And same thing with same thing with Tipsy's Sorpic. And I think going in there that day, I remember that day, you know, he pulled it out and I'm like, it's Fourgate. Okay. Like, cool, man. Like, yeah. let me try your Sorpic, thinking like, oh, maybe it'll be something. And then I was blown away and was like, good picking for one. And for two, like, I got to rethink everything I ever thought about what Fourgate's doing because, you know, yeah, this is sourced, but they're doing it right. So they picked well, and then Tipsy picked well. And MGP obviously makes good stuff. They also make some decent and some not so decent stuff. But it all comes down to when it comes to that point, it's Fourgate picked it, and then Tipsy picked it. Between the two of them, they picked something amazing. And it was really good, but I had to rethink. But before that, so I guess this is what I'm trying to say. There's something to be said for trying before you buy. And if you can go, if you have to pay for it, fine. But you know, if you can go to these places like Handy Spot, where they'll let you try something before you buy something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's good for them. It's good for their business because, you know, whatever. But it's a gift from them because they're trying to sell stuff too. But I think the people that really do that, the gays, hops, and schnapps, but any of the places that are really offering samples, you know, before you buy, I think you could look at it as like they're trying to make money. And yeah, they are, sure. But they're the ones that are so passionate about it that they're also like, no, you've got like, look, you're going to want to get this. So try it. Like, I want you to try it because I know, and you don't know looking at the bottle, but I'm telling you, you told me what you like. I'm telling you that, and that's passion is what that is. So it's like, they're not just like letting you try stuff because they want you to buy something. But like when they're passionate, like Tipsy is, you know, and he's like, no, like you should try this. I know what you like, or you talked about it for a minute. And I think this is what you should try. And then allow the fact that you get allowed to try something before you do the gamble. That's huge. You know what I mean? Like that's a cool thing. And I don't think people respect it or appreciate it enough. And that's the way really to.
I think it should work that way.
It should work that way. But not everybody does that. You know what I mean? Because they aren't passionate about it. They're not going to spend 20 minutes talking to you about why they picked Fourgate. You know, they're just going to be like, well, what's theirs there. You know what I mean? I got nothing in the back.
It's good stuff. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Whatever. Buy something. Get out. You know, don't use my toilet. Although it was a toilet incident.
There was a toilet incident.
We don't have to go into it. But I think that that's good. It's good for them, but it's good, really good for us. So I never would have bought Fourgate for trying it. After trying it, I was like, yeah, I absolutely want that.
I think you bring up an interesting point that's slightly on and off topic. The idea of liquor stores having samples is huge. Like, I think that's as a consumer, a connoisseur of whiskey, if I go in and I see that they're offering samples, yeah, I'm going to try it. If it's something I've already had, I won't. Like, it's like, it's good.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to take offense of me not trying what you're offering. I want to try something different.
New,
like,
yeah.
I want to try something new. And I also want to respect the fact that this is probably costing you something to put on.
Right.
So I'm not just going to drink it to drink it. Like, yeah. I'm going to save it for others that haven't tried
it. It's not Costco, right?
Right.
You ever been there at Costco where you're like, you walk up upon a sample stand and you eat that. Like, you get it all the time. But then you kind of you feel like you have to act like you never, oh, what's this?
Oh, man, this is new.
Oh, and then they tell you about it. You're like, oh, okay, interesting. And then you try it. Or you try something and you really have no intention on buying it, but it like looked good or whatever. Then you're like, where's it at in the store? You know what I mean? You want to like make it seem like I might get this. Although you don't need to do any of that. They don't care. You
can have as many samples
as you want, you know?
She's the one that's like asking like, oh, where's this at? Like, I want to be like kind to be like, you gave this to me. Where is it at?
Right? I want to be considerate.
Right.
At least act interested.
I've seen that bite Mary in the butt more times than I care.
They pull it out right in front of them.
Well, because they're like, oh, this is the last we have. It's right here. And you're like,
right here.
If I take this, I don't know. I can't put it back on the shelves.
And I'm so nice. So I take it. And then if I really don't want it, I just ditch it later. That's what I do. Which you could be like, oh, that's nice, but it's also not nice because now somebody's gonna have to put that back. Yeah.
Someone's gonna have to hunt for it.
Yeah, and if it's frozen or a refrigerator, I just like go around the corner and find a random like, oh, that's frozen peas here. This chicken can go in there. I don't care. At least I do put it back in the freezer or refrigerator. Yeah, and I'm not a savage. You know what I mean? I don't just put something that's frozen on the shelf. That would be wrong. Yeah, but the best thing about Costco now is, you know, you go to those samples and you got the boys or whatever. Sometimes even when I don't have the boys, I'm like, yeah, I'll grab a few for my kids. And then you go back and then you eat them or whatever. And then you go back and you're like, oh, you know, they wanted a few more. It's like,
and they're like, they're not they even can't here. Say no to little
they're
kids.
Not even here. Like I'm eating these myself or whatever, you know. Although, you know, if you read the rules on Costco, apparently you can stand there all day and eat them. There's no limit. You just, you just look like, you know, one of those guys. But depending on what their samples are, I might sit there for a few minutes.
Can we just pull up a chair and sit there?
Yeah, basically you can. They say there's no limit.
I feel like we should try this.
We should try it. Yeah. I mean, I've asked them. So me and Laura, last time we were there, I brought that up. And he's like, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there's no limit. Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no limit. Now, I don't think that they want you to take the whole tray at once, but you probably should stand there and, you know, you could probably like as they cook it or whatever it is. But Costco samples, man.
That's Costco samples.
Yeah. Oh, I just love that. Like, oh, what is this?
Yeah. Oh, it's something new. Yeah. Like, you can't really do that in liquor stores, though.
No, you can't really do that.
You can't really walk around like, oh, something new. What is this?
They're like, well, have you ever had Buffalo Trace? And you're like, okay, if I say no so I can drink this, I look like a fool.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I say yes and drink this, I look like a pig. So what's the right answer here? It's like, well, I have tried it, but it's been a while. That's the answer. Not I have a few on the shelf at home, but
if they look at me like, ooh, we got Buffalo Trace, then I normally respond with, ooh, what is this? As if I didn't hear them.
I know nothing.
Ooh, what did you say?
I know nothing. But Buffalo Trace, what is bourbon? Is this scotch?
Ooh, this scotch tastes terrible.
This is brandy, isn't it?
Tipsy has said that he's done a few events where it's like samples. He's like very selective in who he brings in for those. But the bottles fly off the shelves then. Oh, like people just want to buy them like crazy that night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, when it's there and you try it, it's. And again, actually, that brings up a good point. Like if you haven't had Buffalo Trace in a while and it's there on the shelf, you know what I mean? You might be like, man, I've had it or whatever. But then you might try it. Say you get a sample of it. And again, you've had it before. Maybe you get a sample of it and you're like, oh, man, I forgot how good this was. Right. You might be like, yeah, I'm going to buy it. You know, I think samples are always just good for them, good for us, you know? I think it's a good thing.
I think that Fourgate would be one of those companies would benefit from samples
absolutely
at liquor stores.
Absolutely.
Because there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's good. The only challenge that people have, the turnoff that people have, isn't that it's sourced. Because, let's face it, you and me are like the only ones that really care at this point. Like, we look and we're like, is it sourced? Okay, if it's sourced, what'd you do with it? Right. And how can I justify
paying? Tell me the story.
Paying this price tag? Everyone else looks at it and goes, ooh, that's a hefty price tag. I don't know that I can pay that amount
especially for ever for this bottle. Quote unquote genuine.
Right. You know? Exactly. So like if they would just be willing to do samples, I don't think their bottles would stay on the shelves. Because they're really good. This is not MGP. We keep saying it doesn't taste MGP at all. It's much sweeter than what MGP normally puts out. Right. The finish is much better.
You know, and it's not, they didn't do anything to it. So they really just made a really great selection, you know, and that's it. I mean, that's all it is.
Because this is their typical 95 and 5. That's the mash bill for this.
95 and 5, which we just talked about. It's a great rye.
It is.
And, you know, I don't know what the proof ended up being on it, just you barrel proof.
I think it's 100 and...
It's not hot, you know what I mean?
No, it's not.
But it's got, you know,
I think it says on the bottle.
Full flavor, but it's not hot. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like under 120.
For proof wise, 110.4. This is barrel number 180 or 118, bottle number 82. So they write all that on there for you, which is nice.
Which is crazy for somebody who's sourcing their stuff. Right. They want to be that transparent. I love that. That's great. And there's no nonsense. Like, it's not all marketing. That bottle is very plain Jane.
Right. Which makes me wonder, like, what were they, when they got together, what were they hedging their bets on? Most sourced companies come in and you can tell almost immediately, you and I can look at the bottle and go, 99% sure that is sourced right there. Right. Just based off the label.
The label, yeah.
Like, everything is marketing.
The generic bottle shape.
Right. Everything's marketing on that guy. It's got to be sourced. This does not look like that. It's very generic, but there's no money
put into it. That's the same bottle that... It's like the same exact bottle that French Lick uses.
Right. It's just a tall, slender bottle.
With a synthetic cork wood top. It's like the same. And it's very basic, you know, labels and stuff. I don't know. I think it's very good. They did a good job with it. I think the price... Did you talk about the price yet?
So price tag on this guy, MSRP, like suggested retail, is $224. That's what gets me every time.
And that's steep.
Like that's a hefty price tag for that.
You know, I could say, well, it's 10 years, you know, but right. It's a 10-year MGP. So that is steep. But I think what they did was they selected like something special. Like, and that's why there's not that many bottles of it. They were able to work with MGP and they found, well, we've got these barrels and there's not much of them, but what's there is quite extraordinary. And they were like, yeah, we'll take a gamble on that. Because that is a gamble. Trying to push, like, what would they do if nobody bought it?
I mean, the price tag makes sense when you start breaking it down, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's sourced, it's MGP, it's 10 years. Yeah. They've been around since 2018. So they haven't had this barrel for 10 years to begin with. They've had it for 4, mm-hmm. maybe 5. So... let's say they've had it for 5 years. It's a 5-year-old barrel that they're already buying from MGP. Now they have to let it sit and wait for 5 more years on their investment that they already
if that's paid. How they did it.
Right.
And if they didn't just buy it straight up.
Yeah, if they didn't buy it straight 10 years.
10 years or yeah, whatever.
Which would be even more expensive by that
point. Oh, yeah, it would be. Well, I guess really the burden of the financial burden would be on the liquor stores. Right. Because that point, if you're Fourgate and you can persuade people to buy these bottles and sell them for the suggested retailer, you're done at that point. Fair. So they made their money. So right. But I guess that was their hard thing, was like they have to come in and give these guys that own these liquor store samples, which, what a tough job.
Right.
Right. And then people like Tipsy tried it. Oh, this is amazing. I can sell this. You know what I mean? And they buy X amount of barrels or bottles or whatever. Now, if they don't sell it, they're the ones out. Right. So really, it's up to the distillery to sell to the liquor store owners. Right. You know what I mean? Which is arguably a harder thing to do.
Which is super interesting to think about that, because in talking to Tipsy, there's maybe 2 stores within the Fort Wayne area that he's located that carry Fourgate, and he's one of them. And then there's another store like... Southern Indiana, I think, like more south, that has it. So I don't know if it's the store owners that are very selective or if it's Fourgate that's very selective on who they go
into. Who they go into.
Yeah.
When they use those whiskey reps to do that.
Right.
The whiskey reps, they develop this relationship or whatever. Tipsy must be one of those guys that appreciates Fourgate.
I know that their barrel pick program is incredibly hard to get into. Yeah. So I don't know if they're just very selective. Like if it's just a group of guys like us that would be very selective on the barrels that we use, barrels that we buy, people we go into business with.
And if you're successful with selling it too, like right. If you're not selling Fourgate's going to be like, I mean, I can keep selling you stuff, but you're going to go out of business. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so for, you know, if you say you're Tipsy and you get these liquor reps coming in from Fourgate and you're like, man, this stuff's amazing. I think I can do it. You buy X amount of barrel or bottles and you sell X amount of bottles. Like, I need more. They're going to be like, dang, dude, like, yeah, you know, and it's not just who you're selling it to at that point. We talked about that. That's passion. Like, he sold those bottles.
And he really takes the time to figure out, like, what do you like? He's like, he takes the time to figure out what do you enjoy and what don't you enjoy. And I wouldn't say this is a bad bottle, but it was not a bad recommendation.
No, this is a great bottle. The price is hard to swallow. The rye is easy to swallow.
Yes.
You know what I just got flavor-wise? This might be just the craziest thing. And again, I'm smoking a pipe, so I mean, who knows what these weird... But I just got like this really crazy aftertaste of a PB&J on white bread. Strawberry jam, peanut butter on white bread.
I can see that because it is...
In the aftertaste.
Because like I said, it is sweet, mm-hmm. but there's...
That rye is kind of drying my mouth out.
There's something else about it. Yeah, it's not like
creamy kind of.
It's not syrupy sweet. It's more like fruity sweet.
Fruity sweet.
It is very. It is like that fruity sweet, but that
like Smucker's strawberry jam. Yes. And then, you know, peanut butter and white, the cheapo bunny bread. Super like sticky, you know what yep. I mean? That's like,
the one that sticks to the roof of your mouth. After
you eat it and you chew it and you swallow it, and it's kind of like in your mouth a little bit. That is the flavor that I'm getting.
I can see that. Yeah.
Strange.
It is strange. But
that's just what I got drinking it. It's good. It's that, I like those flavors. I grew up on PB. I mean, I was made on PB&J, right?
It's not a bad thing at all. No. Like, that's not a bad thing. But I would agree. It's a strange, even if you like PB&J. Even if you like that thing, it's still one of those strange moments of like, how? Like, I'm not sure this is supposed to be happening.
Right. Yeah, is my brain crazy?
Right, exactly.
I have a couple like plugs that are like messed up in my cortex somewhere. Yeah, wires are getting crossed. I don't know. Not that there's anything wrong with PB&J. I grew up on that, man. PB&J and Cheetos.
Was it crunchy peanut butter or smooth?
So I was, but now I'm a creamy Jif guy because that's, or actually not even Jif. We get it from Costco. But that's what, honestly, that's what Laura likes. That's what I got. But I was very, very, for a long time, I was very set on this. I was a Peter Pan peanut butter guy, and it had to be crunchy. Extra crunchy if you can get it. And I still like that. Like, that's still my favorite. That's still my thing. But Jif's, you know, Jif's the thing, and creamy's the other thing. And slowly, I have not gotten crunchy peanut butter. But now we do the organic. Healthy.
With the oil sitting on top kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, because when you realize like fake oil that's in peanut butter and how what it does, like how bad it is for you, like it's like, oh.
And gosh. There's a big flavor difference between that.
It's really
like the organic stuff. Price tag is there too. But like if you look at it in the store, even after you get it, like the oils separate and you're like, this looks weird. It's got a different flavor to it.
It does.
It's not a bad flavor.
No, it's good.
It's good.
And when the oil separates it, honestly, the best thing you can do is just take. You know those things that you like whip mashed potatoes up with?
Oh, yeah. Like the beaters?
The beaters, yeah. You just take one beater, throw it in there, turn it on. It's good to go.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It whips it right into shape. Yeah. And it's good. You know, and we've had it for years now. I don't even know what cream, like crunchy peanut butter tastes like. But I used to get it. I don't know if you remember this, but when I was a kid, we would get the Peter Pan peanut butter, and there would be like these little comic book things on there. You remember that or not? Man. They would have like Spider-Man comics or whatever it was. And you would like, it would be taped on the side.
Were they smaller?
Small. Yeah. Yes. They were smaller. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you'd pull and you'd read them and stuff. And I loved it. That was like my favorite thing. We'd go get Peter Pan peanut butter, crunchy or extra crunchy if they make that. I don't even know if they did. But I liked the crunchier the better. And then I would read the book.
I don't know why, but that reminded me of, I don't think they do this anymore, which is such a, it's just a shame. Toys that would be in cereal boxes.
Yeah, like legit ones.
Yeah, like legit toys that you'd find in cereal boxes. Yeah. That would be that was the thing back in the day. And then they switched to books. Do you remember the books that they would put in there? Mm-hmm. Like they would be kind of on the side in the back. They'd put the books in there. And then they switched from, we don't want toys in there anymore. We don't want books. Now we put like
they put DVDs
mazes and stuff on the back.
Mazes and stuff on the back. Yeah. I got one time, and this was like as I was older, but they put like a goofy video game, like a CD. Really? Yeah. They would do that sometimes, like different, like they were like the crappy demo like thing, you know what I mean? But like, I remember playing it on the big, you know, the big computer, you know, or whatever. And the one I got was like goofy skateboarding or something. Like some sort of skateboarding, you know, goofy thing. You remember this?
So I remember there was a Spider-Man video game that we got like for the computer. Yeah. Like that's, back in the day, that was the thing.
Mm-hmm. I had a Spider-Man video.
And I'm pretty sure it was just a demo.
Yeah.
And I know, I don't ever remember, like, they would have just sold a demo in the store.
It was from the cereal box.
It had to be from a cereal box or something like that. And, like, we played that demo until it was dead. Yeah, like, we pretty much ruined the disc. Yep. But it was like, you could get so good at it, and they're like, ah, now it's the end. Like, I want to move on, but I don't want to pay for the full thing.
Right, right. And you just played over and over and over. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Growing up, we never had video games. We had the computer, and we had like one TV in the living room or whatever, family room. I wasn't allowed to have really video games. And then I think I was like 16 when I bought an N64 for the first time. And they were still selling them like in the stores and stuff.
The 64s?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was how long ago that was. They were like on their way out, but it was like kind of like VCRs were kind of on their way out, but they were still selling them.
Growing up, I never knew until I was like in middle school that my dad had a Super Nintendo. Like it was like banned. Like with like video games are not a thing.
Same family. They did not want us to play video games.
Devil, man. And then like when we got to middle school, it was like You read for 30 minutes, then you can play video games for like 15. Okay, I can do the math. So if I read for an hour, then I can play for half an hour. So if I read for longer, then I can just keep playing more. They had to cut it off at a certain point because I was like, that's not how that works anymore. Yeah, they had to put a cap on that one. There was only two games my dad had for the Super Nintendo. Mario Kart.
What, Duck Hunter?
And Mario World.
Oh, Mario World.
Those are the only two ones that he had. And then I remember getting the Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And I learned that Nintendo came out with a cartridge for the Super Nintendo that you could put your Game Boy game in. And you could play the Game Boy game on
a big screen.
On the big screen.
Wow, that's a big deal, yeah.
Oh, it was a big deal for me. It was like I had friends that had it, and I would keep borrowing it. Like, can I have it for like a week? Right. And then turn to like a couple months. But back to this rye. This is fantastic.
It's great.
What would you say out of all the four that we've done, again, ones that have made themselves to the ones that have sourced, would you rate them based off of that aspect or based off of the flavor?
I mean, I don't know. I think if you're going to look at flavor and or like the way that they're made and stuff, I think even just flavor wise, I prefer, I think the Pikesville still beats out even this. Yeah. That's not to say the Pikesville is better than this, right? Because there's a price difference, right? But for what the Pikesville has going on, for what it is, for everything about it, when you put that up against this flavor-wise, I think Pikesville's better. And obviously, this is worth, I'm not going to say, this is actually worth the money. Yes. This is worth, four times Pikesville or three times Pikesville or whatever it is. That being said, I think Pikesville's still number one. I think this would be number two for me.
I was about ready to say the same thing. Pikesville would be number one. This would be number two. I would have to say the Wheel Horse would be number four.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hard Truth would have to be a second or a third.
The third, only. Yeah. Hard Truth was good.
It was good. It was a bit sweeter than from what I expect from my palate, but this surprisingly was good.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
I was pleasant surprised.
And I mean, and all that being said, even the Wheel Horse, I like what they're doing at that Green River.
Right.
And I'd like to try more of their stuff from that distillery.
Yeah.
So it just won't have their name on it, I guess. There were some things that had their name on it, but. That being said, they were all good. I mean, but then again, we're rye guys. So I don't think it'd be hard to bring me a rye that I was like, junk. You know what I mean? But
would it be hard?
I don't know. I can't remember the last time I had a rye that I was like, disgusting. Really? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that's out there.
I know one right off the top of my head.
What is it?
It's from a city in Michigan.
Oh, well. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Never mind. I forgot that was a rye, wasn't it?
That was homegrown.
Yeah, gross.
Yeah, homegrown.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a rye guy. But that was disgusting. Yeah. It ain't no two, James. I can tell you that. That one
keeps being brought up quite a bit. Yeah.
It ain't no two, James.
But all in all, I would say this is not a bad bottle.
Yeah. No, this is great. It's hard to, the price is hard to swallow.
It is. If you're a big rye guy and you can find this bottle, I would say bite the bullet. Yeah. Like, definitely take the risk. I don't think it's going to disappoint by any means. Yeah. I think it'll turn you on to the rest of their stuff.
It's not often that you say something worth $200+ is worth the money, but this is. This is.
This is well worth it. Well, until next time.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you want more great content and other perks, be sure to support the show by clicking the link in the show notes. We can be reached on our website, whiskeytasterspod.com, with any ideas for the show. Thanks again.